Stay tuned now for Dr. Steven Zelikoff and a program you will not want to miss. Bone Talk. That's Bone Talk with Dr. Steven Zelikoff on 1460 WVOX.
Hi, this is Dr. Steven Zelikoff welcoming you to Bone Talk. Today, we're going to be talking a little about my aching feet. We're going to have a special guest, Dr. Jared Littlejohn, who's going to be joining us, who's going to be talking about common causes of foot pain. Dr. Littlejohn is a foot and ankle specialist with training in podiatry, who has had an extensive experience in taking care of people with foot pain in different modalities. He's going to check in with us in a little bit. But before that, we're just going to go ahead and try to address some common issues associated with foot pain. Most of us walk on our feet. We're on them all day long. It's something that we take for granted, being able to walk comfortably without pain. But unfortunately, small things, even an ingrown toenail, can affect your quality of life, can affect the way you move. Oftentimes, things like exercise, particularly things with using sneakers and different types of activities, can change the way we're moving and can give us pain. Additionally, the way that we walk also affects pain in our knees, affects pain in our hips, and can affect your lower back as well. So the purpose of our talk today was to sort of go through some basic conditions. One thing which I'd like to bring out also is that there's various medical conditions which are also closely associated with foot pain. Arthritis can definitely affect it. People that are overweight can definitely end up with pain in their feet. People that are pregnant, women that are pregnant, particularly as you put on more weight, it can definitely affect your feet, particularly as swelling increases in your leg. A lot of times that can affect that. As you end up with more pressure, your arches can sag to some extent and difficulties. So being able to modify shoes and being able to cut down some of the swelling in the legs can definitely help in terms of trying to get people better. Particularly if you're retaining fluid for whatever reason, using a support stocking can also help with that as well. Diabetics can also have various complications and several disorders of their feet. People with diabetes are more prone to nerve damage. They may get numbness and tingling in their feet. And a lot of them also may lose sensation to the bottom of your foot. So if you're diabetic, you need to make sure that you see somebody regularly to get your feet checked, to make sure that there's no problems with any skin breakdown, because ulcerations, a lot of time an ulcered toe can lead to an infection, and that can go ahead and progress to much more dangerous scenarios. So I think Dr. Littlejohn is on with us. Jared, are you with us? Dr. Littlejohn?
Yes, I'm here.
Perfect. Sounds good. Welcome. Thank you so much for being on with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So we were just basically talking about some common medical conditions that can affect patients' feet. We talked a little bit about diabetes, which on a previous show you talked about diabetic sores and things like that that can lead to infection. And the fact that a lot of times diabetics may not even have great sensation to the bottom of their feet, so they may not know that they have a sore or an infection at the bottom of the foot. So using a mirror to look at the bottom of your foot can sometimes help and things of that nature. But at the point of today's show is really talking more about things like plantar fasciitis that people will oftentimes present with heel pain, things like Achilles tendonitis, overuse issues, talk a little bit about things like bunions, hammer toes, and things that give people pain and how do we normally deal with them. So, again, thank you so much for being on with us and then helping us with some of this information. So can you share with us some of your thoughts about people that present to you with pain in their heel? What should they be looking for, and is this something, when should they come in to see you for an evaluation?
Yeah, so, you know, pain in the heel, it presents, you know, several different ways. Some people, they start out with, you know, kind of a dull ache or a little kind of just discomfort or soreness, and then that can progress even, you know, to a much, much stronger level of pain or like a sharp kind of stabbing type of pain. The most common cause of heel pain that we see is from a condition called plantar fasciitis, which I'm sure, you know, a lot of people have heard of and a lot of people have also experienced. But the most common cause plantar fasciitis is basically from the plantar fascia, which is just a fancy word for the long ligament that runs from the very bottom of the foot. It starts out at your heel and it runs all the way to your toes and kind of helps to support your arch a little bit. So that's the most common cause of the heel pain, and you get this inflammation that develops where it starts on the heel bone. And as you know, different causes of it, but I would say the most common one is overuse. You know, if someone increases their activity level, particularly around this time of year, you know, everyone, particularly after dealing with COVID, is now getting back out. They're doing a lot of walking. They're on their feet a lot more, or whether or not, you know, they could just be starting a new exercise program. So these people start to develop this kind of like sharp kind of stabbing pain in their heel. And the most common, you know, descriptor people tend to say is they feel the worst pain in the morning or after they've been sitting for a little while when they go to stand up and get out of bed. And basically what that is overnight or after you've been sitting for a while, your foot kind of relaxes and everything tightens back up again. And then when you go to stand, it kind of pulls real sharp again and you feel that really bad pain and slowly it gets a little better. But that's called plantar fasciitis. And, you know, everyone's, you know, different as to how they develop it. But overall, you know, some of the risk factors that lead people to developing the pain is one is obesity and, you know, increasing that weight gain. You know, I know a lot of times over, particularly this past, you know, year and a half, people have kind of gained weight. They got out of their normal routine. So that could be, you know, one cause of it. People with really high arches also tend to develop this more frequently, as well as people who are, you know, kind of doing repeated activity. So people who tend to run a lot, jogging, you know, long distance walking, that sort of thing as their exercise without doing a lot of stretching. And one of the biggest things is actually just having a really, really tight calf or a tight Achilles tendon. And that kind of contributes to the increase in the tightness on the bottom of the foot.
Now, again, we're on the phone with Dr. Jared Littlejohn, who's a foot and ankle specialist. He's had a foot and ankle surgery at Montefiore and Rochelle and is with Specialty Orthopedics in Harrison, New York. One of the things that people often come in and they talk about is heel spurs. And they'll get an X-ray and somebody will say they have a heel spur. Is the heel spur sort of related to the plantar fasciitis, or is it just sort of an X-ray finding?
Yeah, so this is something I hear frequently. People, you know, they've seen someone in the past who told them they have a heel spur, and they immediately attribute the pain that they're having to this quote-unquote heel spur. But usually what's happening is that's just an incidental finding on the X-ray that you have this, and that's usually not the cause of the pain. The cause of the pain you have is from that tight band of ligament that runs on the bottom. Now, the heel spur could be an indicator over time that you've had very tight plantar fascia, so it could, you know, be just letting you know that you do have this tight ligament at the bottom, but usually that spur, that bone growth itself isn't contributing to the problem, which, you know, a lot of people assume it is, but it's usually just the fascia itself being very inflamed where it kind of starts on your bone there.
Now, if somebody were to present with symptoms of heel pain, they come to you in the office, what are some tests that you would perform? How would you address it? And then what type of treatment would you provide and recommend for these folks?
Yeah, so, you know, we'd obviously start, we'd like to take X-rays just to make sure there's nothing, you know, underlying, you know, going wrong with the foot. But after that, we'll do some examination where we'll fill in the area where the plantar fascia starts, where that ligament starts from the bottom of the foot. Usually you can find kind of a not necessarily pinpoint, but a very, very specific area that tends to be very sharp and painful. And it's pretty consistent across everyone in that area. We'll also kind of test your flexibility of your ankle to see how much motion you have and how tight, you know, your calf and your Achilles tendon is. And, you know, also evaluate, obviously, the arch height and your general biomechanics of your foot. But, you know, after, you know, determining whether or not that is the cause, we start to evaluate, you know, the treatment options for you and the ones that will provide the fastest and best relief. And in most people, this tends to resolve, I would say, probably at least 90% of people there, plantar fasciitis. It probably improves within, you know, 6 to 10 months or so. However, some people, it becomes a more chronic thing. But one of the biggest things you can do initially is just rest if you start to feel it. So if you've started a new, you know, exercise program, or you've been doing a lot of walking or on your feet frequently, just rest and trying to take a week or two off to give it a little bit of time. You can apply ice to the area also. And then taking like ibuprofen or other NSAIDs to help bring down the inflammation. And then ultimately we'd like to get the patient, into a stretching or exercise routine where they're really focusing on stretching out your calf, your Achilles, and then that fascia at the bottom of the foot. So all these things kind of add up together to help alleviate a lot of that tension that's causing that inflammatory pain that you're getting in the bottom of the foot. Ultimately, you know, if the pain is very bad, then we can always attempt cortisone injections to help bring down the inflammation in the area. But you don't like to do that too frequently because, you know, it can lead to some other effects that you're trying to avoid longer term. But it definitely does help with patients initially if they're experiencing very bad pain. And then other than that, appropriate shoe wear is always very good. So you want something that is providing good cushioning, but also a lot of good support for the arch of your foot. There's a lot of shoes that have a lot of this built in, but, you know, orthotics are also an option too to help alleviate some of the strain due to your arch height or your lack thereof with flat feet. And then there are some other things, including like night splints that help to hold your foot up in a stretched position while at night so you don't get that sharp pain in the morning. And then physical therapy ultimately is one of the best options for these patients that we kind of turn to.
I think that the biggest thing is I actually had plantar fasciitis a number of years ago, and I must have spent a fortune on trying to find a pair of shoes that were comfortable.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing is time. I think the biggest thing that I actually found helpful for me was a night splint. And I think that as annoying as it is, because it's big and cumbersome and you tend to kick your spouse or your partner, but the problem is that it does sort of allow the fascia to rest at night. So when you take that first step in the morning, that's a lot more comfortable. So
right.
I did find that to be very, very helpful.
Yeah,
but again, I think it sounds like these things just get better for the most part. And if they're not, then there's lots of treatments that you can do. But I think that's surgery is not common for these, correct?
Yeah, surgery is, you know, that's kind of the last resort. That's, you know, if patients have been trying everything, you know, that's out there and they're still getting no relief, then sometimes we consider surgery. But, you know, it's very rare that we have to do surgery for plantar fasciitis. But if we do, we just, you know, release the fascia itself. But, yeah, like you were saying, the night splints, they're very good. It's just they tend to be a little more cumbersome in bed, so people don't always love wearing them, but they are very beneficial.
Now, what about Achilles tendonitis when people have pains on the back of their heel?
We've been seeing a lot of that lately with, you know, summertime. People are getting a lot more active and outside. So people, you can develop this pain on the back of your heel. You can also develop it when you're feeling your Achilles tendon in the bottom of your leg. So there's kind of two areas where you can start to develop this pain. And there's one like right where at the back of the heel bone, where the tendon kind of runs into your foot, and then up a little bit higher. And people, you know, they tend to get this kind of a sharp and kind of very uncomfortable pain, particularly when they're doing activities, walking, running. It's usually not as bad when they're just resting, but anything that's causing any stress on that tendon tends to cause that pain. And usually we see it with just overuse is a big contributing factor to it, you know, being very active or doing the same thing repeatedly without, you know, appropriate stretching and care can cause this inflammation within the tendon itself. And you can even start to notice that you get, and I'm sure anyone who's had this before can attest, that you start to get this thickening within the tendon itself that you'll even notice in the back of your leg and the back of your heel there that can be very painful as well.
And as far as you treat these with bracing and then gels, anti-inflammatory gels for the most part? Or?
Yeah, so you can, you know, similar to even plantar fasciitis, the treatment for it is very similar. First, you want to, you know, obviously evaluate what's going on there and determine the specific location of it because you can get it a little bit higher up in your leg as well. And, you know, as far as treating it, non-surgical is usually the route that's taken for this. similar to plantar fasciitis. You don't have to do surgery, but only very rarely. Most people tend to get relief, I would say, within 2 to 4 months of, you know, really doing the treatment protocol. You know, resting it is always, particularly if you're very active, you know, resting it is going to be one of the best things you can do initially. Again, with any inflammation like that, icing and taking NSAIDs like ibuprofen or naproxen, that obviously right. helps. And then appropriate, you know, therapy. Physical therapy tends to be, you know, very useful with Achilles tendonitis. And most patients get significant pain relief, I would say, within the first, you know, 2 months or so of beginning a treatment program.
That's great to hear. Again, we're on the phone today with Dr. Jared Littlejohn of Specialty Orthopedics, who's talking to us about various conditions around the foot and ankle. So talk to us a little bit about, I mean, summertime, people are wearing sandals, their toes are out, they're complaining about hammer toes, bunions, things like that. What are bunions and hammer toes? I mean, why do they occur? Is it because of weird shoes? Is it because of a genetic predisposition? And what can we do to get them better?
Yeah, so, you know, bunions are that one thing that always pops up, if, you know, I feel like in conversation, just because, you know, a lot of people have them of different, you know, severity and size. But bunions are, you know, in just an overview, it's that at your big toe joint, you get a very large prominence that develops there of bone, and it's an area where your bones are kind of shifting their positioning, but it's also causing an increase in bone growth on the inside there. And everyone's a little different as to how big theirs is or, you know, or how bad it is. You know, leading to that, there's different, you know, causes for it. One, you tend to see them more commonly in women. However, you know, they're very common in men as well. But women who have for many years been wearing very narrow shoes that get much more tighter, that has tended to cause an increase in the bunions themselves, as well as the kind of the progressive nature of the severity of them. Bunions are unfortunately progressive, so they tend to slowly get, you know, larger and larger with time. So there's unfortunately no way to, you know, completely predict who's going to develop a bunion or you know, stop it before it happens, because it does slowly catch up to you before you realize it's getting to the point where it's causing pain. And that's the biggest concern with bunions is developing, you know, pain. As it gets wider and your foot gets wider, it becomes much more difficult to fit into, you know, regular shoes. And then you can also get some pain, you know, just bending the big toe joint. And then, you know, as they get more severe and they get bigger and bigger, sometimes that big toe can start to cross over the second toe, or the second toe will kind of raise up out of the way and go on top of the big toe when they get very severe. And that can cause, you know, significant pain and discomfort and, you know, concern for wounds and infections long term. So we'd like to, you know, if it's getting to that point, obviously you'd like to intervene. But bunions themselves, you know, as far as what we try to do to treat them, you want to wear very, you know, wide shoes where there's plenty of space for that. You also want to, you know, if you're starting to get some pressure between the big toe and the second toe, you can use some padding in between there, and you can use some, you know, padding to protect the outside to prevent it from rubbing on your shoes as well.
Now, as far as early on in life, do you tell people not to wear high heels and fashionable shoe wear, or do you tell them to, what do you suggest to sort of modify their shoe wear to try to avoid this?
Yeah, obviously, you know, I'd recommend avoiding those very, very high heels that puts a lot of pressure, and those that are, you know, very, very pointy at the end. Unfortunately, it seems like, you know, all the shoes that everyone wants to wear tend to be very pointy and uncomfortable, but so we try to, you know, avoid wearing those that are causing a lot of pressure and bending in the big toe there, because it's, you know, just contributing to the long-term problem. So you know, just wearing wider shoes as much as possible, you know, even for people who tend to, you know, whether or not you like to wear, you know, if you're working in an office and you like to wear nice shoes while you're at the office, I recommend wearing, you know, sneakers going to the office to avoid, you know, as much time as possible in that position. Then, you know, saving those uncomfortable shoes for, you know, rare occasions that you wear those at.
So. Yeah, but they look good.
They look good, and everyone wants to wear them.
Now, when you do need surgery, what kind of surgical procedures are available for this?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different surgical options for bunions themselves. So it ranges from, you know, depending on the size of the bunion, that kind of determines, you know, the higher level of surgical needs. So if it's a mild bunion, it can be, you know, very small, you know, kind of quote-unquote shaving down the bump, and it can range from that to fusion of joints once it gets to a certain severity. And so everything kind of varies. There's everything from, you know, now people are approaching it with different schools of thoughts, whether or not they're trying to do it more minimally invasive or doing it more open. So there's lots of options out there. You know, I don't think it's as scary as people used to describe them back in the day of the you know, the massive incisions. I don't think everyone's doing that anymore. It's more smaller incision approaches to this. But for the most part, people are able to walk right after the surgery, and, you know, they're in a splint and in a shoe, but they're able to walk in kind of a walking recovery, so to speak.
So what is the recuperation generally for somebody that has bunion surgery?
Yeah, usually it's about 6 to 8 weeks before you're back into your regular kind of shoes or back into, say, a sneaker. And you'll wear kind of a post-operative shoe, which is like a stiff-soled shoe for those first, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. While your bones are kind of healing back together. The surgery itself is more than just, you know, shaving the bone typically. Usually it's actually repositioning the bone, so you've got to give it some time for those bones to actually heal in the position that they've been kind of realigned in to get rid of that bump.
Now, if you have both feet involved, would you do both feet at the same time?
You certainly can do both feet. You know, for me personally, I leave it up to, you know, the patient's, you know, ability, you know, their overall functional status. Right. If they're able to get around pretty well, you know, I'm okay doing both feet. However, I do prefer to do one at a time just so that you have at least one good foot to kind of brace yourself with. But obviously, you know, a lot of people, they only want to have, you know, downtime for so long. And so they like to do both feet at the same time as well.
Now, hammer toe surgery, how is that, what's involved with that?
Yeah, so hammer toes, it's basically, you get a very rigid contracture of that toe joint, and you go in and make a small incision over the top of the toe, and you realign the tendons themselves to help kind of alleviate some of that tension that's running over the joints and causing that contracture. We usually take out a little piece of bone in the joint there, and we bring those two bones together and kind of fuse them together, so to speak, or glue them together, essentially, so that they grow together and they grow in a nice straight position. The problem with hammer toes longer term is people, they start to get irritations while wearing their shoes, and they get corns and calluses that can also lead to wounds, and they get it at the top where it's kind of contracted and at the end of their toe from walking on it. And so it's very important, you know, to try to prevent those from getting worse, because people tend to get, you know, pretty significant pain from the hammer toes when they're walking. And so as that progresses and you get these corns and calluses, and then sometimes people ultimately end up getting, you know, wounds in those areas, which can cause infections, which, you know, you obviously want to avoid those. So that's one of the biggest causes for, you know, going in and fixing the hammer toes.
Yeah, particularly in diabetics, I would think.
Yeah, diabetics are a very important one to treat early in this situation.
Again, we're on the phone with Dr. Jared Littlejohn of Specialty Orthopedics, head of foot and ankle surgery at Montefiore and Rochelle. In the last couple of minutes that we have, can you talk to us a little about the correct sneakers for runners and how do we choose what kind of shoe wear we should be wearing?
Yeah, so that, you know, the everyone obviously has this, particularly if you're an avid runner. People tend to have their own very strong opinions about their shoes and that sort of thing. For me, I run frequently, and I tend to wear Asics myself. Those tend to be very supportive shoes. But, you know, any of the good running shoes, such as Asics or Hokas or New Balance, those all tend to be very supportive. Brooks as well. They give you kind of the foot positioning that you need to kind of while you're running through there. So the very important thing, though, is to avoid shoes that are very, very flimsy or that you can bend easily. One good test is to just take a shoe, if you're looking at it, and try to bend the front of the toes towards the middle of it. If you can bend that shoe all the way around, it's not providing you much support overall. So those are very important things to look for. You want a shoe that's kind of match your overall foot type. So if you're a pronator, meaning your feet flatten out a lot while you're running, you're going to want a shoe that gives you a little more support on the inside of the arch in there. Versus if you're a supinator, meaning you have high arches, you're going to want something that's going to give you a little more support on the outside of the foot so that you don't roll your ankle as much. And then they also make neutral shoes, which are just kind of flat overall, so they're not, you know, pushing you in one way or another. And particularly when runners who tend to have custom orthotics in their shoes, I recommend a neutral type of shoe with those, because the orthotics are doing the kind of the functional work, and your shoe is just kind of holding the orthotic in place. But something with nice support, good cushioning while you're running, so you don't have a lot of high impact on your knees and your ankles and your hips as you're going, because, you know, just running itself, that tends to take a lot of increase in force along your joints. So anything to provide a little bit of cushioning to lessen that impact.
That's great. Well, listen, thank you so much. It's been a treat getting a chance to talk to you. A lot of great information. Again, this is Dr. Jared Littlejohn of Specialty Orthopedics. And then if you have any questions you'd like to reach Dr. Littlejohn, you can reach him at 914-686-0111 or through the website at www.specialtyorthony.com. This is Dr. Steven Zelikoff at Bone Talk, wishing you all very well.